This is Joanna Schrader reporting for DomesticFuel.com, and I am on the Hill in Washington, D.C. with Troy Prescott with Cardinal Energy. Troy, how are you?
Doing good. Doing real good.
Well, Troy, thanks for sitting down with me. You spent the afternoon today, really the whole day, going around to the Senate and the House and talking about ethanol. And one of the advantages is that you have this personal story to talk about ethanol. So let's, first of all, tell our readers and our viewers, you know, what's your connection to the ethanol industry and how long have you been in this industry?
I probably started doing research about building an ethanol plant in the mid to late 90s. Actually have envelopes where I had stuff emailed to me from American Coalition for Ethanol back in 2000. Still got the envelopes. And kept studying it. In 2004, we finally had I called some neighbors and a few, my accountant and some other guys that are friends with. We had a meeting out in my farm shop in December 2004. Got a hold of Fagan. They signed a letter of intent after we did our feasibility study. We did an equity drive summer of 2006, raised our money and borrowed the rest from First National Bank of Omaha and started construction. The plant started grinding corn in November 2008. So
you really could be considered almost one of the old timers in the industry.
Well, I didn't act on building it as early as a lot of people did, but yeah, as far as studying the industry and looking at things, yeah, I've been around looking at it for a long time, so yeah.
So now your plant's been operational for several years. What have you seen personally in terms of benefits for your local community?
The local community, the farmers, it's great because not only is there our ethanol plant, there's two other plants about 15 miles, one north and one east of us. So demand for corn is huge. We're getting a great basis for our corn. So that side of it's worked out great for the area farmers. You know, you got 50 employees in all three of the ethanol plants, ours and the other two. So it's been great jobs, great benefits for these people. I mean, jobs our plant manager's from Marion, South Dakota. We hired him away from Purina Mills, but he got involved with our plant and decided he wanted to come to work for us. And so it's stories like that. I mean, this was a farm kid from South Dakota that didn't stay on farm with his dad, but was tied to agriculture, and now he's right back into ethanol with us. So stories like that. The banks have made out okay. We've paid our loans, and we still have a mortgage, but we've got it whittled down. So they've got their payments, made their interest money. In our plant, in our case, we started there in 2008 when things were tough. We've sent out some small dividends, but nothing like what people had hoped for. So that's where, you know, we hope we can get the rest of the debt paid down and then get money out into the investors' holders is our biggest thing, the biggest thing we need to do on our end. But everybody else has been a win for them. I mean, farmers, employees, that kind of stuff's all been great for everybody.
So, Troy, you met with several senators, members of the House today, and I believe that several of them are what people would call on the fence or sort of in that squishy ground where they're not quite sure if they should support the RFS, they're not quite sure if they should support E15. So what was your personal experience today when you were talking to them? What were some of their concerns, and what do you feel in terms of what you were really able to get across to them from that personal story?
It was kind of funny. Our first one was kind of a hardball thrown to us. It was Senator Hatch that co-authored the bill to stop the E15 from going to marketplace. But the interesting part of it was, as we talked to his aide, he kept saying, you know, we co-authored the bill, but yet he was still willing to sit down and listen to the story and listen to what we were talking about. You know, we gave him the little bag of corn. He said he'd never seen corn before. And so, I mean, it was amazing to us that, I mean, you know, he'd seen sweet corn or canned corn, things like that, but as far as actual field corn that you would grind to feed to an animal, he hadn't seen it, or the distiller's grain, or the little plastic piece that they've made out of the distiller's grain that they gave us. So, and that was so new. That's the first I'd ever seen. That was today. It was some piece of plastic. I don't know if you've seen it. It was a molding, and it was made out of distiller's grain. So stuff's changing. So that you could tell that story, that things are changing. Things are coming. New things are coming all the time. But the part that we really, I think, got through to him a little bit was the fact that he's in Utah, so he's not a Corn Belt state. And so that's the reason he needs to be supporting the RFS and the E15. And to, you know, make the opportunity for people to invest money with some assurity that it's going to be here for promoting cellulosic ethanol. And that's when these non-Corn Belt states will be able to benefit from the cellulosic ethanol that's not traditionally made from corn. So
Troy, you know, you talk about, you know, he's from a non-corn state. They don't really understand ethanol. And my guess is if he's never seen corn, he's never been in an ethanol plant. So how do you get these senators and these congressmen from these non-traditional states where they have a huge opportunity in cellulosic ethanol to really switch that thinking and really encourage them to about what that economic benefit is that they could have if they adopted or they supported the biofuels industry.
Well, I think the thing you got to get to is the opportunities he has for his other constituents. Their one concern was their pork producers were upset because of the price of corn. We had to explain to him the drought is what's caused the corn prices to go up. You know, we're raising more corn since 2008 to now. We've probably increased the production of corn enough to about cover what the ethanol industry is using. So that isn't necessarily what drove it up. Is demand higher? Yes, it is, but production is also higher. So you kind of had to reason that with him. The other thing that got his attention, I just filled up with E85 in Danville, Illinois this morning. It was $2.99 when regular gasoline was $3.89. So it was a 90-cent premium to buy regular gas, a 90-cent discount to the ethanol. So that got his attention. You know, you mean there's something out there that we can be selling to a lot of other constituents that could end up being a savings for them. And so you got to just find the niche that gets into their, makes them start thinking, hey, this could be good for my state. It's not a bad thing. So
Troy, do you feel that we have all of these legislators in D.C. and, quite frankly, even on the state-by-state level who have never had any actual interaction with any form of energy? They've never been to an ethanol plant or a biodiesel plant. They've never been to an oil refinery or stopped at the local utility. So do you feel that our legislators really need a more hands-on education when it comes to not only biofuels but energy in general?
Well, you know, one of the guys said in there a little bit ago, they met with two people from Wisconsin and two from Illinois that really didn't have a clue what they were talking about. I mean, those are Corn Belt states that, you know, of all people that should have had the answers or known what was going on, didn't. So if those guys don't know it, take your non-Corn Belt states or your non-ethanol states, and you know there's a lot of education work to be done. And how you get to that point, you know, it's a tough challenge, but you just have to keep doing what we're doing like today. You got to keep, chipping away and trying to get your word out. And most people, I travel a lot. I'm fortunate, me and my wife, you know, we've talked to past, you know, some of the trips we take and things. And so it's kind of funny. I always try to wear an ethanol hat or a shirt or whatever. And you'd be surprised the conversations that it strikes up. And when you get down to it and tell them, the main thing I want to do is give you a choice. You know, when you pull up to the pump, if you want E85, you can get it. If you want E30, you can get it, or E10 or E15. When you tell the people, all I'm trying to do is give you a choice, it usually gets their attention. They don't have a problem with it. And, you know, nobody likes things forced upon them. But when you give the people the choice, and especially a choice to save money, then it usually reasons with them pretty well, and you can kind of get somewhere when you're talking with them. And that's, you just got to keep having those conversations.
Well, Troy, you know, in closing, you keep talking about needing to have this conversation. So for the people who are going to come behind you, hopefully, and continue this conversation out here on the Hill, what's your biggest word of advice now that you've met with several senators and congressmen, you know, from the House, and you're going to be doing some more tomorrow?
Probably the thing, this came up kind of last minute for me. I'd never been on one of these because usually it's during spring break when we've got other plans with our kids. So that's the reason I've never been on one before. This one just happened to luck out. Ron called and asked if I'd come along, and so I did. I wish I'd have been more prepared. I mean, if I'd have known who I was going to go talk with, I would have been a lot more prepared to, when we walked into Senator Hatch's office, I didn't realize he was one that co-authored a bill that was basically totally against what we were wanting to. But it was a very open, good discussion. I mean, he didn't try to beat around the bush. He told us like it was, and so with it, we probably were there as long as we were at any of them today. And so, you know, I think it's just being prepared and being able to tell your story. And it's, you know, it's like somebody said a long time ago, I just heard it said in there again, when you're telling the truth, it isn't hard to keep telling a story. You just keep telling it over and over again. It's the same thing. Yeah, you know, people try to make things up, that's when it gets hard to, how do I tell that story type deal. So, you know, you just keep trying to tell the benefits and you sell it every chance you get. So.
Thanks, Troy.
Thank you.